thanks for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Essence. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine Online. Shawnee Henderson on ending Basketball Wives' marriage and why she's not your typical first lady. In an intimate conversation, she reveals what's next, from scripted TV to her life as a pastor's wife and ministry leader. This article is by Elizabeth Ayula. Taking something from an idea to the tangible, a successful reality at that, is not a feat many people will accomplish in their lifetime. Shawnee Henderson did that, growing Basketball Wives over 15 years into an incredibly popular reality program. But that's over. In January 2026, Henderson announced the series would come to an end to make way for a new era. Henderson's next act is one characterized by growth and evolution, but she's still maintaining her core. Focusing on being a devoted wife to Pastor Keon Henderson, mother and first lady, giving time and energy to ministry work, and while she may have hung up her reality TV hat, she will still have a powerful impact on media. She's set to executive produce some scripted TV projects and will continue to expand her podcast, Grown and Growing with Keon. What's next is different from what people may expect from the powerhouse, but it's perfect for the season of life she's in. We had a conversation with Shawnee about maintaining her sense of self while wearing many hats, how she's navigating life as a pastor's wife in this season, and what this next chapter holds for her. You've had quite the evolution. You started off in the reality TV space, and now you're working in ministry, including the Her Say community for women. What has that transition been like for you, and how did you get from point A to point B? And Shawnee says, well, you know, I think that for me, the reality show had just done its time for sure. You want to go out where somebody's not putting you out, and you can just walk out. And then, as far as the ministry, that was almost like the right thing was just so obvious to me that that was needed. I really love investing in younger women, like young adults and teenagers, so you can share your experiences with them and hope that they don't make the same mistakes. But Her Say was started just because, of course, the church is usually predominantly women, and there was nothing really going on specifically for the women. And we have so many things, from health to relationships to work, kids, all the stuff. So I was like, we need a space where we can get together and hang out and have that safe space where we can talk about whatever it is that's needed. And that's really how it started. As women, we just need safe spaces to have conversations and ask questions that aren't always churchy questions. You're in this season of reinvention. Tell me what reinvention looks like for you. You know what? I think it's a day-to-day thing, a day-to-day process that I don't have to rush. I'm getting into more scripted TV, and I'm still doing the entertainment industry stuff, so that's still there. But there are so many other things that I want to get into. You know, my husband and I have a podcast, Grown and Growing, and we're doing that. We have a foundation that we're starting. It's just so many things on the table that we're working on. But the good part is I'm not in a rush right now. We are taking it day to day, and I'm able to take this part of my life and take my time. I think my previous life, getting into reality TV, was desperation. It was like, it has to happen now. It has to happen fast. I got to survive. I got to get this going. Now I'm in cruise control, and it feels really good because I can just take my time. I'm just in a different space in life, and I have a partner who's supportive and loving through it. And like, hey, what are you in a rush for? All is well, we got this. So that's what I'm doing. And honestly, some days that means coming up with a whole new tentacle of things that I want to get into, which is great. You mentioned at one time being in a place in your life where you felt like everything had to happen now, and that led you to reality TV. I know there are so many women out there in that position, in a place of desperation and feeling like it has to happen ASAP for them. How did you go from there to where you are now? And in retrospect, what would you tell that version of yourself? I do think that version of me had to happen. It was something that I had to go through and I had to experience because I think it built who I am today. I know it has built who I am today. I needed to feel that pressure because I think I was too comfortable before. And now I realize that being uncomfortable is a good thing. It doesn't feel good in the moment, but it's a good thing. It pushes you. It challenges you. It could change the entire perspective of everything you do moving forward. So that desperate rush, hurry up, got to do it now, Shawnee, had to happen. I'm glad she did, because again, it has allowed me to be in a space now where I know what that is, and I don't need to go there anymore. I don't need to ever experience that again. But I don't know that I would feel that way had I not experienced it, if that makes sense. Something very inspiring about your story is your ability to build your own brand and business while maintaining motherhood and a healthy marriage. So what would you say is the thing that helps you? Well, I think it's just intentions, right? I try to prioritize certain things at certain times and find some balance. So like if it's kid time and, you know, I got two in college playing ball and I need to be there for them, and if it's their time, it's their time. I'd like to say I shut work off, but I'd be lying. I'm still accessible, but there are certain things that I'm absolutely going to say no to. And I think there's definitely an art to saying no when you need to say no. You just got to find that balance of, okay, I've hit the peak of what I can take, and I need to shut the phone off. I need to close this computer, give my husband the rest of my day, and give my kids whatever that is. But you got to find a balance, because all of that is going to keep going. That business is not going to shut down in the 24 hours that I need to take a break or give my kids or my husband that time. And I think my husband and I are intentional about the time we spend together. We make sure we are intentional about, okay, one day a week we are having date night. Or even if date night is at home and we have a movie we want to watch, we're just intentional about the time we spend. So it's about intentionality and finding what that rhythm is for you. I want to talk about your role as a first lady. I grew up in church and my mom was the first lady. I saw her go through many things. It was a lot of pressure. What was the most difficult thing about transitioning into the role? I think the most difficult part at first was trying to figure out, do the people even like you? When I came into it, they were already very well established. They had their rhythm. And here I am coming in, not knowing anybody and just kind of feeling out the environment. Like, I can't tell if these people like me or not. But then at the end of the day, just understanding like, hey, it is what it is. So either they will or they won't. And I got to keep it pushing. One thing that I was told going in, and this is by Lady Sarita Jakes, she said, please do not meet one expectation of any person in that church, because once you do, it will be expected to stay that way. You'll be expected to meet everybody's expectations. So don't do it. Don't even start. If somebody expects you to be the big hat wearer, don't do it. They're going to expect it. So that really freed me going in, because we grew up in a church where first ladies had certain responsibilities. They dressed a certain way. They acted a certain way. So when she told me that, I felt like I was free to feeling like I had to fit into a certain box. I've come in authentically myself. I probably don't really fit in with most first ladies, and I'm okay with that. Like, I don't get invited to a lot of the first lady things, but that's not a bad thing, because I wouldn't feel comfortable. I would just feel like this isn't quite my thing. So instead of me having to say no, it's probably best that I'm not invited. But I don't fit in with a lot of that stuff, and I'm okay with it. I think I have my own lane, and Lighthouse is cool with it. They love me, I love them, and we have a whole brand that's called Not Your Typical, because they were like, yeah, you're not just the typical first lady. I was like, I like that. Let's roll with that. Yeah, that takes a lot of pressure off of you. Do you feel like there's anything you had to change about yourself or your life to step into that role as a first lady, though? Oh, yeah, for sure. I had to clean it up a little bit, you know. I think people know that I'm authentically myself, but I don't have to say everything that's on my mind. I don't have to post everything that I want to post or repost. Or, you know, that might resonate with me. I'm trying to be better. I'm trying to be a better example. And everybody doesn't understand your sense of humor or all of that. So I just had to kind of filter myself a little bit, but not in a way where I felt like I had to change. I think I just filtered a bit. Would you say there's any transferable skills or experiences that you've been able to take away from being on reality TV for so many years into ministry? I wouldn't say so, only because I think that with reality TV, we're talking about a lot of things with each other that don't actually matter in our real lives. And not to say that there aren't issues on reality shows that are real, because there are real issues. But for example, I'm not going to be super invested in who you're in a relationship with when you and I aren't even really friends outside of this TV show. I don't know your spouse. I don't know who you're dating. I don't know your life like that. I don't know what you like and don't like for real. For real. But on reality TV, I got to ask all the questions, be all invested in that, because that's your storyline and that's your real life. I don't know your real life, though. So I can't take any of the skill sets from that into this, because I'm super invested in these women. I absolutely care. I absolutely try to get to know as many of them personally that I can. And when they're sharing with me, when we're talking, I'm all in. I might call them later. I'm invested. So it's just two different worlds for sure. A lot of women who have maybe experienced divorce or broken up with a partner may feel like they're not going to be able to find love. But I believe in taking wisdom from a relationship that hasn't worked and applying it next time around. What would you say are some fundamental things that you've learned from your first marriage that have informed how you've shown up in your current marriage? I purposely take into this marriage not losing myself again, because it's so easy to lose yourself, and it's not anybody's fault, really. It's just like you can get consumed by being a wife, being a mom, being a business owner. Whatever that thing is that consumes you can totally consume. And you forget about yourself. You forget about your goals. And I remember in my first marriage, I had goals and dreams that I wanted to pursue. And I would write them in my little journal and put them in a nightstand. And they were there, but life was life. And I had another baby. We moved to a new city or whatever. And there's yet another year gone. So that's something going into this relationship that I shared with my husband. We talked about the possible baggage, right? Because you can allow your baggage to come into your new relationships. My baggage was trust, and my baggage was losing myself and going in so hard, making sure that I had some type of self-worth and self-identity and just some legacy to leave my kids. Like, I want you guys to be able to look back and be like, wow, my mom did this and my mom did that. So I went so hard there. It was just this drive that I have to make it and do it on my own. And somebody else didn't do it for me and make me. So we talked about it. We were very honest with each other. And now even he's intentional about me not losing myself. So he even helps me in that space. And I think communication is such a huge part. And finding that right partner that believes in you, invests in you, wants to see you be great, and you guys can combine and just make a winning team, because you could do bad by yourself. And just being in a marriage now with somebody who is such a good communicator and such a good team player. In the end, it's about us, not just about him and not just about me. It's about us. How one black stay-at-home dad transformed his son's speech delay through books. As a determined and dedicated father, Nosakiri A. Griffin L., Ph.D., empowered his young son to overcome language challenges one book at a time. And this article is by Nosakiri Griffin L., Ph.D. When my oldest son was 3 years old, he was diagnosed with a speech delay. So my wife and I did what any concerned parent would do. We requested for him to have speech services from the public school system. Though the district acknowledged that our son needed support, they denied our request. Then a district official said something that forever changed my life. "Don't worry, your son can receive these services until he is 21 years old." As an educator, I knew the sobering truth. Our educational system often fails black children. My wife and I were determined to not let it do the same to our son. That decision set me on a path that not only helped our son overcome his speech delay, but also taught me a valuable lesson. There is power in reading aloud. And so, to celebrate National Reading Month, I want to urge parents everywhere to wield the power of reading so we can all help our children reach their potential. According to literacy experts at the Warner School of Education and Human Development at the University of Rochester's Reading Aloud, not only fosters a love for books, but also plays a crucial role in cognitive, emotional, and academic development. I would learn this firsthand. Faced with the realization that our son would not be getting services from our school district, my wife and I sought out interventions ourselves. We also made the decision that I would become a stay-at-home dad to help with our son's development. Through our insurance, we signed him up for speech therapy sessions at the local children's hospital and took copious notes. After each of my son's sessions, I would chat with the speech pathologist and ask for things I could do at home. At the end of our 16 sessions, the pathologist advised us that reading aloud to our son and having a conversation about what's going on in the story would assist in his speech development. We took that advice and ran with it. We turned our kitchen into a learning lab. We installed a whiteboard on the wall to conduct our phonics lessons and placed classroom pocket charts underneath the whiteboard to use during phonics exercises. We created phonics lessons, bought educational games, school supplies, and oh yes, we had a section for books. I took both our sons on weekly trips to the library, where I encouraged them to choose books based on their dreams and interests. I craft learning experiences based on the books we read. and I even created customized books featuring each of them as the protagonists, which not only brought immense joy, but also made them want to read even more. That summer, I read more than 600 books to our boys, like Let's Go on a Drive by Mo Williams, Trombone Shorty by Troy Andrews, and Flossie and the Fox by Patricia C. McKissick. And just as the speech pathologist suggested, I made sure to intertwine each read-aloud session with questions that helped them understand the beginning, middle, and end of each story, as well as social, emotional questions to help them understand how the characters were feeling. One of their favorites was A Happy Dreamer by Peter Reynolds. It is a fun and whimsical book about a little boy who learns about a boy who discovers the importance of being a resilient and holistic dreamer. I read this book to my sons at least once a week. One evening, my wife and I were sitting in the living room watching TV, and we heard a big scream from the boy's room. I jumped off the couch and ran to the room only to find our youngest son reading his favorite part of the book when the main character says, "Trumpety zigzag jazz." I smiled and took a quick picture of him, then ushered him to sleep. For me, even years later, this moment still perfectly encapsulates how, when reading is made to be joyful, it can inspire children to do it on their own. By the end of the summer, my older son had made great progress with his speech. The school-appointed speech therapist was amazed, and today my son is a seventh grader who no longer needs speech therapy. This summer of reading also impacted my youngest son. By the age of 2.5, he was able to read. In the fall of that year, my wife and I got a surprise of our own. One day I was riding the bus with my younger son, who was then 2.5. We were sitting next to a young lady with a Victoria's Secret bag, and he stared at the straps on her bag and then began to sound out each letter, P-I-N-K. He then sounded out the word and said, "Daddy, it spells pink." The passengers on the bus were amazed, and so was I. This was a transformative moment because it illuminated the importance and impact of our work as parent educators. Years later, this learning experience with my sons served as the foundation for the founding of our family business, the Young Dreamers Bookstore. And many of the books I read and the learning experiences I design, I look into the community and help I took into the community and help families, schools, and community organizations support children in their reading journeys. Some people may say that it is the educational system's job to provide the necessary services for a child to succeed in school, and that I should not have had to become a stay-at-home dad. And that may be true, but the greater lesson is this. Creating learning experiences like reading aloud to our children has the power to transform their futures, to help them flourish, and to pursue their dreams. Nosakir Griffin L., Ph.D., is a Pittsburgh-based educator, co-founder, and CEO of the Young Dreamers Bookstore. He is also a Public Voices Fellow at the Op-Ed Project in partnership with the National Black Child Development Institute. A Beauty Lover's Guide to Mexico City, from beauty boutiques and spas to the dermatologist-approved pharmacies, here's one beauty writer's guide to beauty and wellness in Ciudad de Mexico. By Brianna Heath. This spring, Mexico City has been trending all over TikTok as an affordable destination for beauty and wellness lovers, with over 5.5 million posts under the hashtag CDMX. Creators are inviting you to spend the day with them as they explore architecture, restaurants, vintage markets, and of course, all the spas and pharmacy the city has to offer. For as long as I can remember, beauty and wellness has been one of the most intriguing ways to immerse myself in any destination. It's an aspect of culture that can easily get overlooked, but like art, food, and fashion, it's shaped by the city's history and community. In traveling to Mexico City over the years, I have found myself endlessly fascinated by the vibrant beauty and wellness landscape of the city. And through exploring the beauty, you can bring a bit of the culture home with you in your daily rituals. What to know before you go? Located in the Valley of Mexico, CDMX's gorgeous rolling mountain views of the Cordillera Neovolcanica may leave you a bit winded due to the altitude and insulating effects of the geography. Not only does the elevation present challenges, but so do environmental stressors like pollution and UV amplification. To better understand the beauty culture of the city and how the climate affects your body, I spoke with local dermatologist Dr. Rosalia Velez Muñez about how to best prepare for your trip. Mexico City, with its high altitude and dense population, faces particularly challenging pollution levels, Velez Munoz tells Essence. Pollution also compromises the skin barrier, making it more vulnerable to dehydration, inflammation, and sensitivity. Especially having dry, sensitive skin, I've found my skin is quite reactive to the city's lack of air moisture. To combat this, Velez Munoz recommends incorporating more hydration and ingredients like vitamin C, niacinamide, resveratrol, and phytoestrogens to neutralize free radicals and boost skin resilience to best prep your skin prior to travel. Additionally, the high elevation can cause shortness of breath, fatigue, and in more severe cases, altitude sickness. I underestimated my body's response to the elevation on my first trip and had a mild altitude sickness that left me nauseous and lethargic my first few days. I recommend budgeting additional time at the start of your trip to acclimate to the altitude before you hit the ground running with all the city has to offer, or else you might be too out of breath to truly enjoy it. The beauty landscape. One of the most striking aspects of the city is the lush green space living throughout the architecture and landscape. It's a beautiful representation of the deep historical importance of nature in Mexican cultures and wellness. Before it was CDMX, it was the ancient Aztec city of Tenochtitlan, and much of the city's pre-Hispanic infrastructure still remains. To this day, indigenous practices are evident in beauty and wellness rituals, rooted in respect for nature's authority. Whereas natural and clean beauty is a luxury niche within other markets, indigenous traditions are deeply embedded within the current beauty landscape here. Their organic, plant-based health and beauty remedies carry a long-standing respect and commitment that supersedes trends. Inside my spa day, keeping in mind my sensitivity to altitude, I kicked off my most recent trip with a relaxing stay at the Ritz-Carlton Spa. CDMX's gorgeous architecture is captivating no matter where you are, but this property overlooks the expansive Chapultepec Park and city skyline, offering unparalleled views. Visiting their spa feels like you've been whisked away to a tranquil oasis in the sky. Lounging, downing, and relaxing is now my favorite way to begin a trip before fully immersing myself into the city's vibrant energy. Upon arrival, I was welcomed with their signature Head in the Clouds time capsule experience. The 25-minute scalp massage in a zero-gravity chair alleviated stress and balanced my body from head to toe. After a long day of travel, it relieved my developing headache and set the tone for the next few days of relaxation. The following day was dedicated to a full experience at their spa that began with lounging by the pool and skyline view before beginning my services. The spa sits almost eye level with the Chapultepec Park, so you feel completely enveloped by the greenery as you relax. In speaking with other visitors and residents, I learned it's a favorite in the city, and for good reason. After a sauna session and shower, I tried their awakening ceremony, which was a 90-minute foot cleansing ritual and full-body massage inspired by the Aztec symbolism of the lesser sun, the new moon. It's designed to inspire new energy with long linear massage movements and green jade crystals to awaken, balance, and heal the energy centers. Immediately after, I had a custom facial to address my specific skin concerns like dryness and congestion, coupled with the aromatherapy. Throughout my stay, I dined at the property's restaurant, Samos, that also overlooks the city and park. The restaurant features gastronomic offerings spanning the diverse culinary disciplines across the country, making it a heavenly complement to a spa day. CDMX is one of my favorite cities for food, even as a vegan, and Samos had some of the most delicious and intriguing dishes I've experienced in all my visits. The best beauty boutiques and spas. The city is most known for its stunning architecture, rich cultural history, and world-class food. But for me, the beauty shops are a must-see. Staying traditional, most spas and beauty boutiques center natural remedies from local brands you can't find anywhere else. If you're looking for a scenic neighborhood where you can venture by foot for hours without running out of stores to visit, Amsterdam Avenue in Condesa is a personal favorite. The elliptical street features a central walkway in the center of the street that's covered by a lush canopy of greenery. Some of my go-to stores are La Tienda del Savoy, Semana, and Malak Botiquera for body care, skin care, makeup, and perfumes. I also recommend Alo Vida in the historic neighborhood of Coyoacán, which was home to Frida Kahlo. For more affordable and low-key spa options, Coty Wellness and Youth for Us are popular. They both have multiple locations in the city where you can easily pop in for a sauna session, facial, or biohacking therapy that suits your needs. Wellness as a social practice is quite common, and Coti Wellness offers group sessions where you can commune with other people as opposed to solo journeys. Each time I come to CDMX, I visit Dr. Muniz and Koyakan for both general research and treatments. And especially when trying new products, it's great to consult a professional to ensure nothing gets lost in translation. In addition to spa and in-office treatments, she recommends the pharmacy as a must for any beauty lover. After visiting a Mexican pharmacy, it will be hard to return to the ones in the States. Per recommendation from Dr. Muniz, my personal favorite is San Pablo, which is a chain that can be found throughout the city. They have an extensive selection of Mexican, American, and other international brands, offering skin, hair, body care, supplements, and more. And if you feel intimidated by the sheer amount of offerings, their staff is incredibly helpful. My Spanish is not the best, but each time I visit, we've been able to get by with a bit of assistance from Google Translate. Some of my must-buys are sunscreen. We know the U.S. is decades behind when it comes to filters. My routine supplements like lion's mane and B12, along with tretinoin and other goodies that catch my eye. We have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Tyra Banks, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.